When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, I'm Dom Shaw and I'm hosting this week's Tripe Supper, Gazette Borough's Middlesbrough podcast, alongside Anthony Vickers to my right and Phil Tallentire to my left. Vic, you were there at the Riverside on Tuesday night for the win over Hull City, which was comfortable, if nothing else.
Routine, yeah. I think. Hull actually had some quite nice approach play in the first half, I think, but they had no punch whatsoever. And Borough were comfortably on top. Their goal was almost more by accident than design from the corner, and once Borough sort of got their act together again, they looked miles ahead of Hull in every department. And then come 66 minutes and the traditional change of bringing Clayton on to shore it up, Borough invited pressure on themselves, and it was a bit of, I don't think it ever felt like they were under threat, but it was very frustrating having taken the sting out of the game when perhaps it was an opportunity to go for the jugular and put on a bit of a show and a bit of a flourish and another couple of goals.
Yeah, you mentioned they're being miles ahead of Hull. You know, when you consider that 10 months ago Hull beat Borough 4-2, and Hull at that point was stirring and looked like a team from nowhere, may well stay up, and Borough and Sunderland were gone, weren't they? This time around, you know, I think Borough are 4 points short of having the accumulated tally of what Hull and Sunderland have both got. Sunderland are in all sorts of trouble. They really are in dire straits. And Hull, you know, Hull, you look and the teams around them are getting points. I know Birmingham got thumped, but they're getting points. Burton are picking up. Bolton look impressive considering how much they struggled early on. It would be patronising, Phil, to say, you know, you should appreciate the position. You know, you should appreciate where we are, because Borough obviously are a lot more honest. A lot more sound and on a stable footing than those two teams, but they're proof, aren't they, of if things are going wrong off the pitch, it can go catastrophically wrong on it as well.
Yeah, well, that's what those two clubs have got in common, isn't it? The real problems off the pitch, you know, there was the whole ownership issue at Hull where they tried to change the name to Hull Tigers, and everything that happened there for a couple of years was a mess. We saw Steve Bruce leave, didn't we? You know, they nearly stayed up last season, which would have been a miracle when you think how poor they were. I don't think the fact that they beat Borough 4-2 was any real reflection on the quality of Hull City. Just on that night they got it right, and Borough got it horribly wrong defensively, didn't they? You look at for me the big picture is, and the worrying trend is with clubs like Sunderland, like Hull, there's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 examples, Leeds United, clubs that spend significant periods in the top flight don't fix the roof. You know, when the sun's shining, they don't set themselves up to be on, you know, sensible financial operations whereby, you know, any season you could go down. So there should be a plan B. You know, you look at Sunderland, they, you know, through catastrophic managerial decisions, they signed some terrible players. They signed all those players under Di Canio, didn't they, in one go. They were left with a lot of players on big contracts, on long contracts for big money. And you see so many examples of how that just drags a club down like an anchor. And it's really disappointing when you think how much money's flooding into English football and has done for the last 20 years. That, you know, financially, there are so many basket cases. And I think, you know, fans, I probably should be asking the serious questions, but also we're all probably a little bit guilty as well, because we all want our club, when they're promoted, to invest in players and to break the transfer, you know, record, and, you know, compete with the big boys. But the reality is that there should also be somebody keeping one eye on the bottom line. And too many examples of clubs like Sunderland, like Hull, of you know, getting caught out higher up the table, and when they come down, they're in no position whatsoever. Bolton are another one, aren't they? You know, they had all that time in the Premier League.
Blackburn,
they made all that prize money, and just through really rank bad management, through not having a sensible strategy. I think it looks as though, from what I can see at Burnley, they're trying to do it the right way. You know, they're investing behind the scenes in the, you know, any club that spends 4 or 5 years in the Premier League should have a top-notch training academy. You know, the money that's coming through from the TV deal is phenomenal, and there's absolutely no excuse why the stadium shouldn't be brought up to speed, even if that's just, you know, improving the facilities underneath the stands, whatever it be, improve the pitch, make the training ground competitive so that you can attract better players further down the line. All that kind of behind the scenes tinkering needs to be done, as well as, you know, and then if you can still stay up there for another 5 years, then that's in some respects a bonus, because you just can't compete over decades with Chelsea, Man City and Arsenal.
A lot of clubs have done the infrastructure, but the bottom line is that if you get relegated, it's not only a financial toxic shock, but it, very often it's a culture shock to the players that you've got as well. A lot of clubs bring in cultured, silky foreign players for the Premier League who are really not prepared mentally or physically for the attritional grind of the Championship. And unless you can make very quick adjustments to your squad, then you're in trouble. And very often you can't make adjustments to your squad because it's hard to unload those players who are on big money.
Yeah. I think the other thing, you know, you talk about the losing trend and getting out of that losing trend. Now, Gary Monk talked about a hangover that was maybe more difficult to shake than what he thought. But when you look at Sunderland and Hull, he might be onto something, because you talk about the kind of the cultured players who've come from abroad and won't be perhaps ready for the Championship. But if you look at Sunderland and Hull's team, both on paper, while by no means brilliant, should be better than where they are currently in the Championship table.
I think there is...
Now, Sunderland's team has got players like John O'Shea, be it at the back end of his career, Lee Cattermole, a lot of other players who signed for Man United, Paddy McNair and the likes. They've brought in Ashley Fletcher now. Hull, you look at Hull's team, I know the point's different, but Kamil Grosicki probably backs up to your point, but he's going to the World Cup in the summer and was the best player on the pitch when Borough lost at the KCON last year. Both are evidence, and I think Borough to a much lesser extent, of how difficult it is to get out of that losing cycle.
You have a psychological hangover, there's no question about that. There's a long history of the teams that come down. I mean, this year, if Hull and Sunderland go down, that'll be the first year that two teams relegated from the Premier League have gone through the division. But it's not unusual for one of them to go. And, you know, we've mentioned a few names there, but there's loads. I mean, Charlton, Southampton, Leeds... Norwich, and they've all gone out of the division, and a lot of them have gone into administration, and it can be a long, hard road back, and there's no guarantees. I mean, Leeds, it's what, 14 years now since they were relegated? They've been into administration several times because making the adjustment to a much smaller revenue turnover, a much smaller budget, much smaller gates, much smaller TV money. It's really hard when you've got the infrastructure, especially if you have built a brand new academy and you've got a big flash new stadium to support. You know, it's a high risk game, football, and as Phil mentioned there, you know, fans are guilty as much as anything of putting pressure on the board to show ambition, i.e. spend a lot of money that they don't have. And although there is a lot of money in football, the vast majority of it is going into the players' pocket.
Well, what is it about the Championship, though, Phil, that makes it so unpredictable? Because owners and managers have experience of this level, and they know what it takes to get out of it, or should know what it takes to get out of it, but there just doesn't seem to be a secret recipe or a recipe that's kind of well-known to almost achieve in the league.
Yeah, I mean, partly I think it's because a lot of players are much of a muchness. You know, you don't get too many outstanding players, but you don't get too many dog-awful players either. You know, they're all of a similar standard, they can all do a job. Probably the big difference between a player for me in the Championship and a player in the Premier League is consistency. That's why you sometimes see a Championship team have a stormer against a Premier League team and knock them out of the cup. But you know that if they played them 20 times out of 20, they'd only win maybe one or two of those 20 fixtures. So I think it's all about having a manager with a strategy and a board that supports the manager. So, for example, Burnley is a classic example. To an extent, Steve Gibson with Aitor Karanka. There was a plan in place. There was a manager who was going to be given a degree of time. He was given a degree of support from the, you know, in terms of financial support. And there was an understanding that the club was all on a one-way track. They're all thinking in the same way. They're all heading in the same direction. And I think when you get that, And I think a little bit of luck as well, you can get out of this division. You know, we've seen teams come from nowhere to get promotion. You know, look, think of Blackpool when they went up. They came from nowhere. You know, the speed was up on the rail, didn't they? And they got up there. You know, Sheffield United could yet get up this season. They probably won't. Looks like they've dipped off. Bristol City, last season they nearly got relegated. This season they've got a genuine chance of finishing in the top six. And who knows, could even, as you know, that example I mentioned about knocking a Premier League team out of a cup. There's a number of factors you have to get. I do think the gap between the bottom of the Premier League and the top of the Championship isn't as big as people make out. I think a lot of the time it's about the players that surround that core of a squad. You've got one or two great players, it turns an average group of players into a competitive one. I mean, look at Swansea last season. They were one of the most shambolic teams I've ever seen at the Riverside. They looked half decent going forward. They were a mess at the back. And yet a manager came in and did enough to keep them up. And I think that's probably similar to seven or eight clubs at that bottom end of that division. That any one season, they could just have a mare and go. And it's, I don't know whether it's the culture, the financial culture that's in the game now. As Vic said, you know, you've got players who are coming over, just really coming for the money. You know, you're probably not getting the first pick of players either in the Premier League or the Championship. But people say, don't they say, well, why didn't Borough sign him, or why don't they go and sign him? Borough are a Championship club, and if a player from Egypt or Venezuela or from USA or from Germany is coming to England, he wants to go to the Premier League. So you can have as much ambition as you want, and Steve Gibson's got loads of it. Doesn't mean to say you can go and cherry pick the best players like Borough could when they were pretty much market leaders in 1995.
We'll leave Hull and Sunderland to scratch about the bottom of the Championship then. Hopefully that's still the case for Sunderland when Borough win there on Saturday. Hull, like we said to start with, it was a much needed win, a comfortable one in the end. Patrick Bamford, now Ashley Fletcher didn't score for Sunderland on Tuesday night, and Chris Coleman talked about afterwards that he's perhaps suffering from a bit of a lack of confidence. Now Bamford, if indeed Bamford was struggling for confidence himself, that would be understandable given the fact that he's hardly scored this season and he's playing out of position. What should we take from that finish on Tuesday night, Vic? Does it just hammer home the message that he's perhaps wasted out there on the flank?
Yeah, I mean, it was noticeable that the goal came from a little incisive run through the middle. He picked up a loose ball and darted through the middle, which is where he's natural. You know, that he understands the territory there. You know, he knew what the defenders were going to do. He knew where the keeper was, and he did what he did in 2015. You know, he was channeling the playoff run from that year, and it was a lovely finish. The bottom line is, he's not a winger. He's not a wide midfielder, and we've had a long succession of players forced into positions that they're not comfortable with. Like Stuani is obviously the most obvious example. And then you wonder why they're not producing the goods that you know they can do. It's not just Borough. It's endemic throughout football. I mean, I'm sure there are Man United fans asking why Rashford isn't playing through the middle, and, you know, Danny Welbeck, Sturridge, all these players get forced out of position because it's a very competitive sport. The manager will have a first choice that, you know, he wants to play in a particular position, and everyone else may need to jiggle around them to get the balance. I think everyone knows that Patrick Bamford's a makeshift in that position. I think there's a chance he could be replaced by Harrison this year. Possibly they'll buy someone best suited for that role next year, and that will leave a big question mark over Patrick Bamford.
If you're looking for a left winger, Borough have probably got the best left winger in the Championship in Stuart Downe on the books. Is it almost too obvious a suggestion to move Downe in the left and play Bamford in the number 10 role?
I just think, you know, going to the point that Vic made, I think we're currently in I can't remember a time when there's been such an obsession with the tactical trend of the day, the tactical fashion. I think this is going back over the last 10 years or so. In answer to your question, yes, that is too obvious, clearly, that, yeah, why wouldn't you play, you know, Downing? Why? I think Downing's been at his best in the wide position this season. But, you know, you see nowadays managers following trends. You know, 4-2-3-1 is the vogue, or has been for a lot of managers. You know, do you remember when Chelsea were ripping up the division last season, suddenly everyone decided it was three at the back? That's how you had to play, 3-4-3. Well, Chelsea have got some of the best defensive players in the world. They can make that work. You know, I go back to the example not so long back when it suddenly became vogue for every every manager in the division, top few divisions, to play a right-sided midfielder on his left foot and vice versa, because the better coming off onto their best foot off the wrong side. Now, that can't all be right. They can't all be, that can't, you know, if that's right for 1995 or 2003, why is it not right now? I think there's a lot of that. Oh well, it's vogue, it's trendy, we do that. I don't understand why your priceless assets in a football team are strikers. Every manager will tell you that. Give me a striker I can rely on. That's the first thing I want, a strong defence and a striker I can rely on. Borough have got, in my view, two of the best championship strikers, bar none, in Bamford and Assombalonga. Both are being misused, frankly. Now, good luck on Gusteddi, he took his goals well on Tuesday night. That second was a peach. He proved me wrong because I didn't think he should have been in the team. But you look at his strike rate this season, it hasn't been good enough. And yet he's Tony Pulis's go-to guy. Now Pulis has clearly got the formation he wants to play and he's going to stick to it, but that means that two of the best strikers in the championship ain't going to play, or they're going to play, as Vic says, out of position. I don't get it. I think you're cutting your nose off to spite your face. I think a manager's job is to make the best use of the assets he's got. We already know he wanted Mitrovic in January, which means that even Gusten wouldn't have been playing if he'd got him through the door. So there's you've walked into a club and you basically say, I don't want them. I don't want Braithwaite. Get him out. I don't want, well, Patrick can play in midfield. Sombalonga, sorry, Kiddie, you're going to be on the bench. I'm going with Gusten. Now, Pulis has got every right to do that. And who knows, he might get Burr in the top six this season. And I touch wood, he does. But I still think there's an obligation there for a manager to walk through the door. I've got a £15 million striker whose average is one goal every other game. I'm going to play him because he'll score me goals. If we play 20 games, he's going to get me 10 goals. That's one box tick to move on to the next problem. And as you say, Downing's now out of position. He's not looking comfortable in that central role. You've only really got, of the front four, Traore looking particularly comfortable at the moment.
Isn't the problem that at the start of the season they invested a lot of time and money in building players to play 4-3-3 with the width coming from the full-backs? Then blinked and changed their minds.
I think he was going to play 4-2-3.
I mean, the thing was, if they spent the vast majority of the summer preparing that, he didn't move to that formation until the week before
Augsburg,
the season, did he?
Yeah. I think there was complete muddle thinking in the summer. I don't know who, we might never know who was signing the players and who was okaying them. You'd have to think that Monk, as the new manager, would have a fair old say in who came in. I mean, we've mentioned it in this forum many times, the idea of spending £6.5 million on Fletcher is, you know, frankly baffling.
I mean, for all the summer investments, the only two Monk signings who were in the team on Tuesday night were the goalkeeper.
Yeah, exactly, because they were signed to play in a certain way with a different manager. A new manager comes in and changes the formation completely, and you find 3, 4, 5 players out in the cold because their roles are made redundant.
I think
the two attacking fullbacks, for instance.
When you said to change the formation completely, Pulis is playing the system that Monk played throughout the season.
I know, but the attacking fullbacks.
That's different. Yeah, yeah, but
so the tactically everything's changed. So you've got two players there who have effectively been made redundant. Their role as attacking cavalier fullbacks to provide the width no longer exists.
I didn't even think. I didn't feel as though when Burrow were making signings, they were filling gaps. It didn't feel like, right, we've got a gap at the pit in the pitch here. Player A will slot into slot A. I never felt that all the way through, apart from obviously Assombalonga was clearly signed to be the striker. I get that, but after that, where was Braithwaite going to fit in? Where was Fletcher going to fit in? What was Shotton coming as a right back or a centre back? Obviously Randolph's a keeper, that sorts itself out. But you know what I mean? It didn't feel as though Burrow had a gap in three specific positions. And they're going to go out and buy players to fit in those three specific positions. Because once again, Burrow is still unbalanced in the attacking midfield places.
So Bamford, hopefully he'll kick on now. Hopefully he'll enjoy a flurry of form like we know he's capable of at this level. But what does the future hold for him if Pulis stays in charge?
Well, I imagine in the summer the manager will buy first choice players to make the system work. And someone like Patrick Bamford, who is not a Tony Pulis style wide man, nippy winger, will effectively become a fringe figure again, because they'll find that the strikers they want, the wide men they want, and those people who don't fit into the system will be available. And Patrick Bamford could find himself moving on yet again after another barren spell at a club and with a huge question mark over him. And I really feel for the bloke, because we know he's a good player, he's just never had a chance to to nail down a place in a team that is, you know, built with a role in the team that's specific to him.
There seems to be a maturity there, though, Phil, because I remember a couple of years ago, 3 years ago when he was here, he talked about knocking on Eintracht Frankfurt's door and asking him to play him as a striker. Well, on Tuesday night, he was interviewed by Rob Law, and he was talking about how he realises the job he's got to do. It's nice, he said, because he's learning other parts about his game. So is there a realisation that... You often hear footballers say, don't you, I'm not bothered where I play as long as I'm in the team. Do you think that... Does that happen, or is that just a case of, you know, I'm not bothered how many I score as long as the team win type of
thing? I don't believe that for a second. I think Patrick Bamford's a player who wants to play where he wants to play. I know he said the right things on Tuesday night. You'd think, wouldn't you, that he was talking the team ethic. And I think he's had his confidence smashed so much that he probably means what he says. But I preferred the Patrick Bamford who walked into Middlesbrough as a loan signing from Chelsea with a good reputation and had the cojones to knock on Karanka's door and say, excuse me, but I'm a striker and I want to play up front. Now, that could have backfired on him and he could have been sent packing, but Karanka's fair play, surprisingly, from what we know about him, said, OK, I'll give you a go, and he was rewarded. Now, I think Patrick Bamford's lost some of that swagger, and it's disappointing because he had the confidence to go out and boss the pitch. He looked a really good player when he was here the last time. He signed in January this year, last year. He didn't get a start under Karanka, I don't think. He came off the bench once. He got a couple of starts under Steve Agnew. We found out later that he was bereft of confidence and self-belief, understandably, after that horrendous couple of years out on loan, here, there and everywhere. This season he's been second choice. You know, in the summer you had to watch Borough go out and spend £15 million on a strike, and then you start thinking, where's the forward planning if Borough is starting to sign Gusted for six, Bamford for six, then they go and spend that fee plus more on another striker. You think... You know, you think, poor Patrick Bamford, he's committed his future to Borough, his first long-term deal from leaving Chelsea, and he sees Borough go out and break their club record on a striker. So he's thinking, I've got no future here. So he's had to knuckle down again. I thought that finish was indicative of the class he's got. It was just for a player who has got no confidence to loft the keeper like that, to definitely chip it over, was brilliant. It just shows to me what a good player there is there. But I think Vic's right, I think he'll go in the summer, because I can't see an eternal... in a Tony Pulis team where he fits in.
Just a few other subjects to rattle through before we wrap up. Mo Besic, a couple of appearances so far. I wasn't at Cardiff, so I didn't see him there, Vic, but I thought he was good on Tuesday night. It's dangerous to get too excited too early about players, but on what we've seen so far, is it a case of Besic and in the middle of the park now?
I think that's what will evolve over the coming weeks. I think he's bright, he's got good feet. He's doesn't hide. Demands the ball off people. He's always available. When he came, the understanding was he was a defensive midfielder and a destroyer. But he didn't look like that to me. The way he gets up and down the pitch, he had a nice little mazy run into the box. You know, got lucky with a little deflection and managed to get the ball come out with the ball at his feet. That could have been a wonder goal if that had gone in, and that would have been some home debut. Yes, I think we have to be wary about going over the top on the basis of a couple of performances, but he looks to me hungry. He's got a bit of aggression about him, and I'd like to think that he would be one of the mainstays in the team. Probably along Housen, to be honest, who's got good engines and gets forward as well. I think ideally that's what Tony Pulis would want.
A bit further back, Dale Fry, first league start under Pulis. Now, considering Martin Craney was signed in January and Craney can play at centre-half, that was a vote of confidence, wasn't it, in Fry to get the nod when Gibson was made unavailable?
Yeah, I was pleased to see that he did get the nod. And, you know, he did okay, didn't he? The lack of preparation may actually have helped him. He didn't have too much time to think about it. Just went out there and played football. I know the corner was the Borough conceded was a little bit sloppy, but you can't necessarily blame Dale for that, or indeed Ayala. Borough just switched off, didn't it? There's a talented defender there, isn't there? You know, a very, very high quality defender who physically has all the attributes, seems very calm, level headed. You know, eventually it's going to come to the crunch. You know, he could be the man to replace Ayala and or Ben Gibson if Ben Gibson moves on. He's still a little bit young, but it's getting to that point where he really could have done with a season somewhere this season at a decent club. I don't know, hypothetically say Blackburn with Mogger in League One, playing 35, 40 league games, getting those games in his legs. I can imagine he's a Tony Pulis kind of defender as well. You know, he's big unit, isn't he? big presence at the back. So it's pleasing to see. He's a talented footballer, and he's potentially another in that long line of quality centre-backs that we seem to produce up here.
I know he hasn't been playing a lot, but when you look at how Shotton and Ayala and Friend and Gibson have been performing since Pulis took charge, Fry's game is going to benefit, isn't he? Regardless of whether he's playing or not, it's going to benefit from being around that kind of well-drilled defensive unit and working with them day in, day out.
Yeah, and I think we have to remember he's still only a young lad. He made his debut very young and was quite impressive there, wasn't he, for a couple of matches.
17, wasn't he? I think,
and then, you know, he had a good, solid loan spell where he'll have learnt a lot. I think that's the stage he's at in his career. He's got to learn as much as he can on the training ground from the people around him. He'll look at Ben Gibson, who's a couple of years ahead of him, but on the same trajectory through the academy and having gone out on loan. And you can see him getting gains under his belt, you know, possibly the rest of this season, certainly next season, and let's hope he continues to develop.
And Jack Harrison, again, like you say, you were at Cardiff, you saw him for 6 or 7 minutes there. Jono was purring about
he
his,
was, yeah, Jono
his
was
carry
very
over from the bench. It's this kind of bit part, and that's an understatement really of what we've seen so far. Do you think how the rest of the season's going to pan out? Do you think that's how, sorry, the rest of the season's going to pan out? Will it be next season? Or a Man City made no secret of the fact that there's a gentleman's agreement perhaps in place. Will it be next season?
I think it will depend on whether he's out of the team now because he's actually lacking much fitness and much sharpness. You know, we know that the MLS season finished in November, so that's quite a long break away from active football. It was only 7 or 8 minutes his cameo at Cardiff, but he looked lively. You could possibly say the rest of the Borough side that day was so sluggish that he stood out on that basis. But again, he looked hungry. He made a couple of good runs. He had good feet. He could beat a man. Cardiff are, you know, it's land of the giants. You know what I mean? And he was physically matching the players he was up against, and he didn't look in the slightest bit cowed by them. So I think the ingredients are there. I think we'll maybe see him next time for half an hour, and then we'll probably take it from there. I haven't seen enough yet to judge, but he looked like a sparky character, and maybe that's what we need, you know, something to liven the team up a bit. It's all become a bit samey. I'd like to see more of him.
And finally, Phil, Lewis Baker is alive.
Blast from the past, wasn't it?
In the squad,
yeah.
As the 19th man, which I think is probably a little bit of a damning indictment of Marvin Johnson, who's clearly way on the fringes as things stand, but can he play a part at all going forward, or you know, will he kind of continue as an outsider?
It's all journalistic cliche, isn't it? Mystery surrounds. I mean, what is going on there? It's barely, I think I looked at the stats here, I forget, it was back in the autumn, wasn't it, the last time he had anything to do with the Borough team, really.
It's 4 months this week since he last kicked the ball.
So you're thinking, what is going? Why is he still at Borough? Why isn't he back at Chelsea and going out on loan somewhere else? We just don't know. I can't see him getting involved this season. I mean, he wasn't going to be in the squad on Tuesday night, was he, until the emergency withdrawal of Ben Gibson. So I don't know. I mean, it's done him no good, has it? He's at that brief taste of first team football he had in September. You know, since then he'll be just kicking his heels, getting frustrated. He's not even playing for the 23s, I don't think, is he? So
he's playing Fortnite with Britta Sombalonga and Patrick Bamford, by all accounts.
Yeah, so there you go. It's, I don't know. Sometimes again, I'm going back to the sort of the summer transfer, and you're thinking, I didn't think he, but when I'm not saying he wasn't a player Borough shouldn't have targeted at the start of the summer, but once they made the signings they made, I didn't see the sense of, once they signed House and people like that and Braithwaite, I didn't see the point of signing Lewis Baker.
See, I thought on paper Baker made more sense than, say, Fletcher. Borough needed a 10.
Certainly more sense than Fletcher.
They needed a 10 who could come
that
in.
That was a position
they?
That
but
they,
he did.
They didn't really
he
have.
He straightened, didn't he?
I mean, that was part of the skill set that Borough didn't have. And it's been the problem position now for several years.
Again, though, talked about Bamford. You know, if you were to move Downing back over to the left, then not only Bamford is a 10, but Baker is a natural 10.
But then you're moving several component parts around of the machine, aren't you? And managers don't like that. Managers like consistency. They like people to play their way into a particular position. And they're loath to move people around in an attempt to accommodate them if it's moving three or four people.
I don't know, you've got the number 10 is probably the hardest position on the pitch, arguably, in terms of what's required. Borough have been trying to find a number 10 since Aitor Karanka used 4-2-3-1 when he first came here, and they still haven't succeeded in finding a consistent, because it's such a difficult position. Why Borough thought to get a guy in from Holland, a loanee from Chelsea, could be their number 10 based on what they're seeing last season? Well, that's a huge leap of faith, frankly, given the quality of players that Borough have tried in that position. You could argue only really Ramirez has looked anywhere like convincing. It's such a tough position. It goes back to what we were saying before about the trying to get the strikers into the team. It's this obsession with making 4-2-3 work at the four-two-three-one work at the expense of anything else. So it's a great topic to debate, and we'll no doubt revisit it many times.
You would well think that Patrick Bamford's done enough to keep his place in the team at Sunderland on Saturday, where we'll be live on our blog as ever from about 1 o'clock at the Stadium of Light, where hopefully Borough can continue their charge towards the playoffs and continue Sunderland's crisis and strife at the bottom of the Championship. Thank you.
Smile on the agony.
Cheers.